Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. And Rosenbaum Media Group, a digital communications agency integrating high-definition video into PR, marketing, advertising, and social media campaigns. Big-picture thinking for local and national clients. RosenbaumMedia.com. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore.
So the Media Project is underway from the studios of WAMC in Albany, New York. I'm Ira Fussfeld. My title is Publisher Emeritus of the Daily Freeman of Kings, New York. And another emeritus is here. That would be Alan Shartok, Professor Emeritus at the State University of New York, CEO of Northeast Public Radio, publisher of the Legislative Gazette, and Judy Patrick, not yet ready to be an emeritus, but no doubt soon will be. Someday will be, and she is the editor of the Daily Gazette of Schenectady, New York.
What do you mean? She's the youngest of us by far.
She is, that's right.
She'll be here 40 years
yes,
from now.
I misspoke.
I am not emeritus, but always glad to be here.
Nice to see you. Well, we have a lot of media topics to discuss. I want to lump three in one big bucket and talk about them not so much from the standpoint of the actual events, but how the media is handling these events. And the three would be the Bergdahl POW trade with the Taliban story. Second one would be the Hillary Clinton book tour and how that is being covered. And the third would be the most recent of the three, which is this big upset of Eric Cantor, the Republican majority leader in Congress, who was beaten by a Tea Party candidate in his congressional primary.
And decantered.
He was decantered. Let's start with Bergdahl. Again, without looking at the merits of what the government did and who Bergdahl is, et cetera, how do you think the media is covering this story? And I'll tip where I'm going with that, in that widely now being called a deserter and all the rest, when, in my view at least, a lot of the facts of this story, perhaps most of the facts of the story, have not yet emerged, yet there seems to be a media agenda or a media line that's now being expressed.
And a frenzy in order to find every bit of information about this guy that you can. There's a story in the paper the other day about how he was trying to get into the Coast Guard and in midway through his training, I guess, or something along those lines, he gets shoved out. So the people are going to be looking for every part of this. There are leaks from other people in the platoon who were saying, you know, he walked away. That's how they got him. And, of course, there is the backdrop of this tremendous angst between Republicans and Democrats in this country. The minute anything happens on Obama's watch, they come after him with everything that they got. I mean, if they're not calling him a traitor, Obama, they're coming very close to it and saying he never should have done it. It wasn't fair to everybody else. Look, the Israelis will sometimes trade hundreds of people for a single prisoner, because you don't leave anybody behind.
But has the media become part and parcel of this?
Yes.
More so than perhaps you would think they should be? I mean, we all know and expect what we've been hearing on Fox News, but the other media that you might consider to be more down the middle or leaning left even, the line is he is a traitor, he is a deserter, and it seems to me that that has become part of the fabric of the reporting as if it's a fact, and I don't know that we know that their facts.
But
the story turned really quickly. I mean, one minute it was a really positive story, and I turned my head and wasn't paying attention for a couple of hours, and then it was entirely different. And I found myself trying really hard to figure out what happened and why it happened. And I'm still looking for that. And I think you really need some hard journalism here to establish what the facts actually were. Everything gets politicized so quickly in this nation nowadays.
Part of that politicization you can see again in Fox, which is generally labeling him as a deserter, is castigating the father because the father grew a beard, and denigrating the swap as being too great a price to pay for this guy. And we are seeing that now from the right, which is what you would expect it to be, and they're jumping on the left. The New York Times, which had what would seem to me to have been straight reporting on the platoon, the kind of reporting that Judy is talking about,
a troubled platoon,
and that is being jumped on by the right, so that it's doubting what it seems to me to be straight reporting, and it's being characterized as politicized.
You cannot pull apart the fact that on both sides, but especially on the right-wing side, there is an absolute commitment to, quote, get Obama, no question about it. And so, look, newspapers in this country, to some degree, have to choose sides like everybody else does. The minute you try to separate them out and say that the New York Post isn't part of the right-wing gang, or the Daily News doesn't have the agenda that Zuckerman has at that particular moment, or that there is a political backdrop to all of this, and if we don't see that, this is an almost impossible
discussion. So the problem
discussion.
For us in the media is, and this is just the latest example, is that media outlets that honestly tried to be fair brokers of the news and report the news as accurately as they can are hamstrung because the voices on both sides, in this case and in many others from the right, are denigrating their reporting and throwing what should be considered to be good reporting in doubt. And it's very hard for us to report accurately anymore because a lot of people are simply not going to believe it.
Ira. Are you telling me that the New York Times does not have a political agenda?
I am telling you that they are not to the left what Fox is to the right.
That's correct. Yeah. No, I think that's right. I think they are Rooseveltian, and I love them, but I think that they have a political agenda. I think you can tell who they are. I'll tell you who they are. They're people who believe in American capitalism, but still believe that you cannot denigrate the poorest among us and take away everything because you will bring the house of cards down. I think that's what Roosevelt believed. I think it's what the New York Times believes. And I think to some degree, we're given a choice, they will side with the president. I do too. But it's a legitimate political.
But do you think that the story that you picked up on that we've all read where it questioned the platoon is a legitimate story that should be reported because it's legitimate news, or do you think that that is politically motivated?
No, it's not politically motivated, but it doesn't mean a lot.
You also have to respect the Republicans who do want to bash Obama. That's what they're supposed to do. That's what this country is all about.
I'm not sure I agree.
But what you have to do is separate the journalism coverage and make people more media literate about how to read a story and how to tell when something is biased. And it's something I know Rex pounds on this, but
he
should be doing this in the schools. We should be doing this with the adults in our country, just talking more like this program does about what to look for when you read a story to make sure that it's not biased.
All right, so what should we look for in the Hillary coverage? Now, Hillary Clinton has a long-awaited, much-heralded book out, Hard Choices, and she goes on a certainly well-planned-out media tour. And then she had interviewed with all the networks, including Fox. I don't know that she's done print, which is interesting if I'm right. Do you think that the media...
Well, she got a lot of attention in the print, I can tell you that much.
Are we in the media enabling her? Are we falling into a trap of helping her start her presidential campaign by giving this free ride to her to speak as she is doing on a variety of subjects? Or is it entirely appropriate for us to say, hey, she's maybe the next president of the United States. She hasn't spoken much since she was the Secretary of State. We have a lot of questions we want to ask, so there's legitimate news value.
You know, certainly it deserves coverage, but the New York Times piece about this fans waiting hours to see Hillary Clinton, towards the end, it puts it in some context where the Barnes & Noble manager is talking about the fact that there are other people who have drawn bigger crowds, including Justin Bieber. So let's not overestimate her crowd drawing capability.
Yeah, this was a story about her book signing at Barnes & Noble in Manhattan when there were a lot of people there, but not as many as with many other celebrities
who have done
signings.
You know what? This is crocodile tears as far as I'm concerned.
Which part?
The whole part. You guys are both editors. You've been editors, you've been publishers, Ira, in your case. You know full well that you take a look at what's on the smorgasbord for the day and you pick the thing that is most likely to get people to read the paper. And one of those things is you can deny it to the yin-yang.
Although there's not been a lot of, as I say, I don't know of her doing any print interviews about that.
I'm not done yet.
Yeah, go ahead.
You may think I am, but I'm not.
He's just getting started.
But Hillary Clinton, as you said before, is probably going to be the president of the United States, the first woman president of the United States. She has huge amount of cachet. And of course, you're going to give it every kind of break like you can, including going to where she talks about, you know, anything that could be potentially personal, her daughter, her relationship with her daughter. This is all the stuff that you read in newspapers and makes people want to buy them.
Oh, you put her on a magazine cover and the magazines sell off the shelves. I mean, she does sell.
But are we simply giving her a microphone and not interviewing her and reporting her critically?
Let me tell you something. As one who has interviewed her, I think three times, I can tell you she's smarter than everybody in this room. She is so blazingly smart that she can find out who you are, take your number, and do with you what she will. So don't give me this condescending, are we letting her get away with anything?
Well, wait a minute.
There won't be a day you'll be able to do that.
We really shouldn't use the media show to critique what she says, but how smart can she be when she puts herself out there, woe is us, about the money that they didn't have?
Well, they asked her a simple question. They said
to buy a house.
And we're broke. And so now they didn't have enough money to buy a couple of multi-million dollar houses.
So they had to go out on the speaking
tour.
And
didn't know that they were going to make millions of dollars on the speaking. Why did she even raise that? That's my point.
Because she's smarter than you are. And I'm going to tell you why.
Yeah, I want to hear why this is.
I'm going to tell you why she's smarter than you are. Because go around the corner here and see how many people are lined up ready to buy a lottery ticket, figuring that that's where they want to go. Wait, the people who have the least in this country quite often don't know what's in their own self-interest, and they aspire to the American capitalist dream, which is we're going to have the most money, we're going to have it all. So here comes Hillary, and she says, when they ask her this question, and by the way, I don't see any indication that anybody's really all that upset with it except for a couple of newspapers, including Murdoch's New York Post, of all places, about this. Your mouth is open, Ira. Why is that?
I am stunned because I don't understand why she's smarter than anybody in the room, yet she put herself in the position to say these things that
because she knew every American would subscribe to it. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
You're telling me that the person who is on welfare is going to somehow relate to Hillary Clinton saying they were broke when they got out of the
way.
Boy, that's
sad. And the people who are struggling to come up with a down payment for a $100,000 house and can't do it are going to buy that?
You know, well,
you two naysayers, negative barbers or whatever.
The two of us would be Ira Fussfeld and Judy Patrick, and the guy who's taking Hillary's side is Alan Chartok, and that's okay. He's entitled, but
that's condescending.
He's wrong in this case. So let's go to the third of my trifecta, which is the Eric Cantor story. Mm. No doubt a major upset, perhaps some described as the most historic upset in the history of politics, that a majority leader would be beaten. And it clearly stunned the political insiders, but it certainly caught the media off guard because they were reliant on polls as we frequently are, and the polls did not suggest that this upset was coming. And on the night of the story, none of the media, particularly the TV news networks, were even in position to report this story until about an hour afterwards because they didn't expect there was going to be a story to report. So I guess the question is, did the media get caught with its pants down?
Well, would it be the first time? I mean, you'll remember when the wall came down. We all knew about that. In fact, our multi-billion dollar CIA operation didn't have the slightest idea it was coming. In this case, it was sort of the perfect storm. And the press just didn't begin to understand what was happening. What happened was, of course, that the Tea Party all around the country was getting its head handed to it. But not in this case, not in the case of Cantor. And that's what grabbed all of the headlines. And so I'm just simply saying to you, what was it? Now let's take a look and see. One, is it possible that it had to do with the fact that the guy was trying to be decent or trying to come to some accommodation on immigration? You know, at some point, politicians have to act by what's right as opposed to what's political. And if you take a look at the European Union right now, the parliament goes south and north based on immigration. Same thing happening here. You put two guys in a cave and you say, this is wrong. Get that other guy. That's what's happening. It's anti-immigration. It's Lou Dobbs. And it caught him hard.
What about the impact of right-wing talk radio here, which is being credited in some corners, particularly Laura Ingraham.
Because it shows you how stupid we are.
And Glenn Beck as well.
And Glenn Beck. It is being credited for swaying that election to such a degree that this guy, Brat, won it by a landslide.
By more than 10 points when the guy had raised less than a couple of $100,000.
So does this not show the powerful influence still of talk radio from the right?
Yes, and it's very disappointing.
Right, because there was some indication that the National Tea Party wasn't throwing a ton of money or support.
No, they didn't.
Very little money.
They didn't.
You know, when I was watching the cable news networks that night on primary night as the results came in, the story actually became more of how surprised we are rather than who won.
Well, that leads me to the next point, which is after the last round of big elections in November, I think there was a general feeling that the polls were so accurate and the results reflected what was in the polls and what had been reported by the press before the elections by the polls. Well, look what happened here. The polls couldn't have been more incorrect. So now going forward, should the media be stepping back again and saying, we better be careful what we're saying in the polls and relying on the polls to report our stories?
Well, there's a man named Wasserman who works for the Cook Report, and he said something very interesting. He said there's another invisible elephant on the table, and that's the fact that Cantor's Jewish, and nobody wants to touch it. Now, I had a letter, a mean letter. I said it on the radio. I had a mean letter from a lady who said, then why did he get elected 1894? The answer is that things change. In Germany, you will remember, Jewish soldiers fought in World War I with great distinction, but that didn't stop the incipient anti-Semitism from taking root at one place. Now, I'm not saying it's all anti-Semitism, because it's not, but I am saying that when you get an anti-immigrant crowd, a right-wing crowd, fired up, anti-Semitism can easily be a part of that.
There is a story in this morning's Washington Post as we speak about the impact of the Jewish vote in that race, so I commend people to read it. But you just mentioned something, and it's another media issue regarding this, about immigration. And the prevailing narrative the night of the results was that he was done in, he being Cantor,
right,
was done in by immigration.
That was the prevailing narrative.
That's right. And
now, that's what it was worth, the prevailing narrative.
Meaning you agree or you disagree that immigration was the key factor?
No, I think it was a key factor. And I believe if you roll the tape backwards, you will see that I said that.
Okay. Well, Rachel Maddow, obviously from the far left, broadcast the night after the results.
Why do you say far left about her?
She's. I think that would be an accurate description.
Well,
of her.
I don't think so.
Okay,
I
well,
think
let's...
The reasonable left, I think.
Well, far doesn't mean you're unreasonable. She had a report based on polling of the people in the Cantor district saying that most people, by a wide margin, were not opposed to immigration. Her point being, let's not be so fast to say that immigration was the reason that Cantor lost.
Well, Mr. Ira, as long as we're talking about what the press knows and what it doesn't know, let me give you a little bit of a sociological tour as to what goes on. What happens is that people have been trained by their mothers and others what to tell their pollsters. But when they walk into the polling booth, some of the darkest devils of all take over. And then that is a tough time because now they pull down the lever and they walk out and say, I'm not opposed to
immigration. Well, it certainly
reform.
Could be that. But if yeah. But,
and now what reporters are going to know that?
All right. But then from the media standpoint, the media seemingly universally decided as the results came in, the reason for this was because of immigration. I don't know that we can be so sure that it was immigration.
You know, and it also appears that there was some good coverage of this race at the local level. Even though the local papers were surprised as well by the results, it does seem like they gave this race a solid look. Even though they thought that Cantor was going to win, at least you had some coverage of those issues on the ground, on the newspaper. Okay.
What about social media here? Because, you know, now the old newspaper stuff, Ira finds, has been failing on this. You say, well, there's a little bit more hope for the local niche papers. But in the meantime, everybody's got Facebook and all the others, Twitter and everything else, working full time, carrying the boom, 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 boom. The drums are through the jungle.
I'm just saying that it seemed to me too easy and too quick, and it had to be done immediately for the particularly those who were on the air that night or had to write a column within an hour to say two things. One, the reason Cantor lost was because of his position on immigration, and two, is that this is showing that the Tea Party is a force to be reckoned with going forward, when the Tea Party, at least in recent primaries, had not been a force to be reckoned with.
This was only one race involving
roughly 60,000 voters.
Go ask Lindsey Graham. Yeah. He won big.
So again, the media has, this is a media show. The media has jumped to these storylines. This is what we're going to hear going forward.
Let me help you with this, Ira.
Please do, Professor Sharda.
Let me help you. I see the condescending nature of that. But let me tell you, you're sitting there, and you have a column due the next day.
Yes.
And you're going to have a column no matter what happens.
Without a doubt.
So there begins to be this coalescence, a circling of the journalistic wagons. And one person says it's immigration. I say, yeah, yeah, I'll have some of that. And another person says this or that. And that's how it begins to go.
Well, I would just say, as I might on any number of stories, starting with Bergdahl, is let's let this play out. Because I suspect that in a few weeks from now, when people have had a chance to reflect on it, there may be a different
like
line.
What?
That it was Cantor was not servicing his district, and the people felt he was getting too far away from the district because he had become a leader.
That's one way of looking. Let me give you the other way of looking at that, if I may.
Yes,
is that okay,
sir.
Without calling
yes.
you professor this
no.
time?
No, Professor Emeritus.
The other way of looking at this is that Cantor, as the second most powerful person in the House of Representatives, is capable of bringing huge amounts of pork to the district, and he did. So the idea, now look, lots of people have suffered. There was a speaker in New York State, it's been pointed out to me recently, named Stanley Steingut, and he was from, mm-hmm. I believe, Flatbush, Brooklyn, and people thought he became a little bit uppity in terms of representing their interests, even though he kept putting more and more and more stuff into his district, and they threw him out. So it's possible. But on the other hand, another interpretation that the press could make is somehow all that stuff was going in and it didn't count.
You know, the problem also is this knee-jerk reaction to any kind of story. Analysts go on the air really quickly. If you're going to be an analyst and you're going to get paid big bucks, or if you're going to write a column, columnists usually think about things for more than an hour. They research it.
They don't have a choice.
Well, they knew that election was taking place that day. They should have been schooled on the issues.
Should have been.
Well, again, this comes back to how they, as well as the political operatives themselves, were caught with their pants down because they didn't expect Cantor was going to lose. And Cantor loses, and now they're sitting there at 10 o'clock at night with a deadline of an hour to go, or in the case of TV, they've got to go on the air right now.
And Judy is saying, where's your column?
That's right.
So I'm saying,
how come the media, how come the columnists, let's use them, how come the columnists were not better prepared? How come the columnists may well have relied on a false narrative?
That would mean they're smart.
Well, we expect that.
We expect more. They're well-established institutions. Thousands, millions of people are looking to them. If they're going to be in that position, they really got to get bone up on the issues and be ready to write or talk.
Oh, come on.
No matter what happens.
How can you disagree? You have a commentary every morning on this air, and people respect your opinion, and they believe you know what you're talking about, and you usually do know what you're talking about, because over the course of time, you've proven that you know what you're talking about. If you go on the air one or more times and talk fluff, people are not going to listen, or people are not going to respect you.
I did not know the wall was coming down in Germany. I did not know Eric Cantor was going to lose. I didn't even know the name of his opponent, to be perfectly honest with you. I do know, post hoc propter hoc, what all the ingredients were. And then I have to start assembling them and putting them together, which I think I have done well.
All right. Well, we're just about out of time. I'm going to give Alan 20 seconds to talk about this Target's breach of credit cards. Remember that whole story?
Yeah.
It created a circumstance where people started changing their credit cards and changing their credit card IDs, et cetera. Public broadcasting stations are finding that that hurt them in generating annual donations because people had put credit cards on file and those credit cards were no longer any good. So there was a big pool of money that the public broadcasting stations no longer had. I'm just wondering whether in the recent successful fund drive you had here, if you experienced the same thing.
We just went through a remarkable $1 million fund drive. We did it in a relatively short time. It was great. We have people out front. If a credit card number doesn't come up right, they make a telephone call and they find out what credit card number they want. But I can tell you this much. about half, at least half, I think now, of all of the people who are pledging to a fund drive are doing it with a credit card.
Well, the good news is that from what I can tell, people like this program when they donate, and that's always good to hear. And I hope this will be another one that you like. We're out of time. I'm Ira Fussfeld for Judy Patrick and Alan Shartok. This has been the Media Project. I hope you'll tune in next week. Thanks.
Humph.
Now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh.